The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
Did you know that in the last decade, the number of 12 to 17-year-olds suffering from mental health disorders has more than doubled? By the time they turn 18, as many as 50% of teens will meet the diagnostic criteria for at least one mental health disorder. What's responsible for that increase? And what can parents do to help their teenagers who may be struggling with these issues?
Well, for some answers to those questions and more, we turn to our guest on this episode, physician Dr. Kenneth Bock, the author of an insightful new book called Brain Inflamed, Uncovering the Hidden Causes of Anxiety, Depression, and Other Mood Disorders in Adolescents and Teens. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
Tell us how the pandemic is impacting mood disorders in young people. What are you seeing?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's unfortunately a powerful one. I basically speak with families all day long from all over the country and even all over the world, but we'll stick to the U.S. The pandemic is impacting these teens and adolescents in very adverse ways, even kids too, but I think we're talking about teens and adolescents here. But, the teens and adolescents are already under so much stress. This whole generation of kids, with the pressures from social media and having to be on all the time, and all the cyberbullying and all the pressures to perform. You know, these days kids really, everybody's got to perform in every single way, whether it be school, academics, sports, piano, whatever it is. And then you take teens who the ultimate aspect in some way of being a teen or the ultimate desire is to be with friends. You know, this is when they're kind of individuating from parents and all they want to do is be with their friends. So now you set up the situation where number one, they can't be with their friends. There's so much virtual learning going on. And as parents will tell me, you put entire families, I mean, husbands and wives as well. So let's not forget that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
as well as kids, you know, from whatever ages, especially teens, 24/7 in a household, and you have a kettle of, oh my God. So the stress there, it's what I see is that stress can manifest in, you know, maybe some more of the teenage type of moodiness and irritability, but certainly progress to anxiety, depression. There are now clearly more suicides in teens and adolescents and suicidal ideation. As it was even before the pandemic, we had all these teenagers taking SSRIs, the antidepressants for anxiety and depression. And now we're just adding this whole component. And the thing I really want people to be aware of is, yes, the psychosocial stress is there, but that stress also creates inflammation, systemic inflammation in the body, this whole inflammation in the gut immune brain axis, and subsequently inflammation in the brain. And that's something that has to be considered when we look at these kids, not just thinking of the psychosocial issues, but the fact that there is actually physiological inflammation in their brains.
Yeah, let's talk about that since that's the title of the book and what you're such an expert in. Neuroinflammation. We hear about inflammation in all other parts of our bodies, but nobody really talks about brain inflammation. Why should parents be concerned about this now?
Number one, because it's real. It's present in many, many people with psychological symptoms. And I don't want to ever say that every psych symptom, you know, whether it be when we say anxiety or depression or panic or OCD or what have you, is due to inflammation. I mean, sometimes the overriding thing are psychosocial issues, especially in a teenager. Can't accept a failure at something, or they break up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend, and oh my God, the world's ending. So we know that is an aspect of teens. So there are sometimes really very major psychosocial issues, but even those can be associated with inflammation. And the reason it's important is because there are approaches to brain inflammation that can help. So in other words, some of the main points that I really want parents and mental health practitioners and teachers and educators to understand is this is especially important in kids that may also not be responding quite as well as they should or not at all to psych meds or therapy, various kinds of therapies that a child would go through. And we need to think that potentially maybe there's something contributing that's not just on a psychological level that is kind of manifesting as psych symptoms, but may be related to underlying brain inflammation. And so first you think of the underlying brain inflammation, which there are so many studies in the last decade really supporting that this is more and more. But then for me, the question always becomes, what is driving the inflammation? Okay, so if the inflammation is there, what may be contributing it? Is it just as intense stresses that the kids are going through, especially now in the pandemic? But is it something other as well? Could it be an infection like Lyme disease, a tick-borne infection like Lyme disease or Bartonella? Could it be an infection like strep that then causes a misdirected immune response and results in autoimmunity and inflammation in a certain part of the brain that controls movements and emotions? So these kids might be fine and wake up one morning with tics or intense anxiety or separation anxiety. They won't leave their parents. They won't go to school, or incredible OCD where they're doing these rituals and it becomes incapacitating, as well as all kinds of other symptoms. Could it be that there are nutrient deficiencies or insufficiencies that may be contributing to neuroinflammation, something like, let's say, vitamin D, for instance, which so many kids are deficient in vitamin D, and metabolic imbalances and immune hormonal, all these imbalances that we need to think of? Because the reason being, Jan and Laura, is that if these are not considered, then we relegate a teen or adolescent to basically a lifetime of psych meds and therapy, when if we could figure out what might be underlying causing inflammation and we can remediate it and treat it, we could totally change the trajectory of their life and also the family's lives. Because as you probably know, and you guys are, I love the fact that you're a mother and daughter team. They're working together. I actually have my son working with me, which is really a pleasure as well.
Yeah.
But you know, when your child, I always say you're only as good as your worst child, really. And basically, if your child is really affected with a significant mood disorder and it's really affecting their lives, you know it's affecting the lives of not only the parents, but the siblings, maybe the grandparents or what have you. So if you can heal these kids and help them heal, can really help heal the families as well.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, and the moment another business dream becomes reality. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody.
So what do you do if someone comes to you and says, my child has just been having all of these different mental health issues and we've tried to get to the root cause of it? We haven't been able to, you know, as I understand, a lot of the people who come to you kind of come to you as a last resort because they have tried a lot of other things and haven't been able to deal with the situation. What do you do as a medical detective, as it were?
So first of all, it's very interesting that you say that, because I think it used to be that way more. But as word gets around, I think people do come a bit earlier, which is great. But the point is, when I have parents come to me and say, you know, I've tried everything. So I look and have a little bit of a smile on my face. And it's not in any way a condescending smile, but I probably don't think you really have, because I have a pretty large armamentarium in my diagnostic and treatment bag. So the first visit I have with them is an hour and a half and sometimes even longer. And a lot of it is related to really listening, asking questions, but also just listening. Because, you know, you can get from the history, if you take a very, very good history, it's probably 90% of what happens. And people will tell you, if you listen in a way that's open, and not in a way that's trying to kind of put them in a diagnostic box. So there are a lot of clues, and that's one of the things I do at the end of every chapter in the book, is I give these clues and questions that parents can look at themselves and maybe bring to their own practitioners, to not for diagnostic purposes, because the book is not to diagnose, but is to give them avenues to pursue. So for me, I'm listening with that in mind, looking for clues, then maybe asking other questions, trying to put it together. And generally, I will come up with a very early roadmap as to where I think we may need to go, what might be happening. I'm not going to say it's definitive after one meeting. So I'll check some labs, probably a number of labs that they've never gotten before, because I may be looking at tick-borne diseases in a way they've never had done before, or metabolic imbalances, or immune system imbalances, and allergies, and autoimmunity and things. And generally, I can find something. Listen, nobody could ever tell you 100% of the time. But if you listen closely enough, and I get enough clues to then set out a number of directions for me to evaluate and then subsequently treat, it can shed a lot of new light.
You mentioned how diet and vitamins can play a role in neuroinflammation. And I'm wondering if in most of these cases, it's easy to treat by doing simple things like that rather than relying on medication with side effects that parents don't want their kids to go through.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we certainly, listen, I'm an integrative physician. I'm an MD. So I do use medications, because especially when somebody is really severe, I mean, like, you know, with the rapid cycling mood swings and aggression and harmful to others, potentially themselves, you know, you need medications. So there is a place for medications, but most people who come to see me, yes, they rather do it naturally if possible. And there are a lot of nutrients that can be very helpful. There are anti-inflammatory nutrients. I mean, listen, very simply, vitamin D is very important for the immune system and balancing the immune system, and if there's autoimmunity. So a lot of these kids with brain inflammation can benefit from vitamin D, especially because many of them are low. And then there are other kinds of anti-inflammatories, things like, you know, the curcumin, which is from the spice turmeric, but a concentrated, very highly absorbable and high-grade curcumin, and other types of, we call them phytochemicals, nutrients in foods. For one reason, there's something I want to say where the nutrients may play a role. I don't know if you've ever heard of something called the blood-brain barrier. There's something I talk about a bit in the book, and it's very important. I don't think people really ever think about it, but we have in our bodies this very, very fine cell, dynamic cellular interface. There's one cell of these little tiny capillaries in the brain, which are the smallest blood vessels, and there's basal lamina around them. There's a couple of cells that separate the periphery, our outside of, you know, all of our body and the brain. And for the reason it wants to keep toxicants and inflammatory mediators out of the brain. Well, there's a number of things that can actually lead to weakening the integrity of that blood-brain barrier, very much related to the integrity of the gut barrier, which has a very similar function and related to the gut. And so things like stress is one of the things that unfortunately makes both of them lose their integrity and be more leaky. Sleep deprivation will do that with the blood-brain barrier. And there are certain nutrients that can counter the inflammatory mediators that can come from the gut even, and that can make this blood-brain barrier even more permeable. So things like resveratrol, you've probably heard of that, the red wine paradox. It's that nutrient in red wine that was really helpful in the French in spite of their diets for their hearts, where resveratrol happens to help kind of tighten up the blood-brain barrier, as does vitamin D, as do a number of other nutrients and herbs, and decreasing stress and getting enough sleep. And of course, when I learned about that, even all this research revealing that decreased sleep affected the blood-brain barrier, I wasn't thrilled, because unfortunately I can be really busy and sometimes not sleep as much as I should. So the good news is that you can remedy that by getting a really, really good night and a few nights of sleep. But so it's very, very important in the sense of the integrity of the brain, the integrity of the blood-brain barrier. So there are nutrients. And then there are nutrients not just for that, but there are nutrients. We use things like L-theanine and certain herbal combinations that we use in combination that can actually lower cortisol, which is associated with increased stress. So there are ways to make kids feel better. We have something called a Calm Companion that is a, you know, you can mix it up and kids can drink it. It's cherry flavored or unflavored. And it consists of certain nutrients that actually can help in terms of support moods and decrease anxiety. And even CBD. I'm using a lot more CBD, cannabidiol, in these kids, not with THC, not the psychoactive one, but the one that is very anti-inflammatory and also can decrease anxiety and help sleep. So there are many things we can do naturally, many things.
And when you say that parents come to you as somewhat of a last resort, at what point can parents admit to themselves, because I know it's really hard to do, that maybe their kid is suffering from something that's more than just the average teenage mood swing and needs to look into this?
Well, so that, again, you asked really, really good questions. First of all, I don't want it to really come off that it's a last resort. Many people have referred to me earlier because of the results I've had. So, you know, I always ask where people came from, and more practitioners refer, and people will know somebody that brought a kid. And so it's not always a quote last resort, although of course it's not a first resort, because I'm not a primary care physician. I really do a lot of detective work. But parents, I think it's when their kids are not progressing the way they should and they've seen various doctors. They've probably seen potentially a pediatrician, maybe a pediatric psychiatrist, maybe a pediatric neurologist if there are other symptoms. And they feel like they either haven't gotten answers or they're told it's just typical garden variety anxiety. And what I wanted to say when you asked the thing about the teenagers is in the book, I bring up this concept that I've coined called the mood dysregulation spectrum. Kind of came from my work with the autism spectrum kids and recognized that these kids' symptoms kind of fit along a spectrum, a mood dysregulation spectrum, and I actually graph it. And there actually is, we've created, and this is where, when I talk about you guys as mother and daughter, my son has created a website called braininflamed.com. And on there are some graphs where people can see it ranges from the mildest, more moodiness and irritability, progressing with more severe symptoms, anxiety, depression, OCD, panic attacks, even severe mood swings, aggression, and even psychosis, you know. And for kids that are bears in the house, right? Your kid is just so difficult, so defiant, and so, you know, oh my God. And then they have a sleepover. Obviously, in the pandemic, we're not seeing that. But before the pandemic, and the parent of the friend that they slept over says, I can't, you know, your kid is so unbelievable. He or she is the most polite, sweet kid we've ever seen. And you go, you're talking about my kid? That's what, that's what we call teen, in the book, I call it teenage-itis. You know, that's not something really to worry about. Okay. Unfortunately, it's a pain in the, you know what, in the home with you guys, but that's where it really should be. If your kid is doing fine in school and the teachers never have a problem and their friends' parents never have a problem, that's teenage-itis, and you got to live with it. And, you know, you'll deal with it behaviorally, what have you. It's really when it starts to affect them in other settings, especially in school, where the teachers or the guidance counselors are complaining, and whether it starts impeding with friendships, where either they're getting into arguments with friends because of whatever's going on, or they're avoiding social contact because they're just feeling so badly, or have, you know, this whole thing about, you know, poor self-esteem and more social anxiety, maybe not leaving the house, maybe not wanting to go to school. That's when things, you really have to look into it. So there is a differentiation between the typical more psychological irritability and moodiness and maybe insecurity of teenagers and the symptoms that really progress along that mood dysregulation spectrum.
Do you find that boys have more of these mental health disorders during the teenage years or girls, or is it split evenly?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't really think I could say it's one more than the other. I think, you know, sometimes if you look at statistics in terms of, and I can't quote them, so I'm not going to obviously quote something that I can't be 100% sure of. But I see both very, very frequently. So I, from my experience, I can't really say it's one more than the other. I know in terms of the autism spectrum, and it's much more boys than girls. In ADHD, it's more boys than girls, much more so in autism, like 4 to 1. But yet, interestingly enough, when it is the girls affected in the autism spectrum, they're usually affected even much more intensely. And so in my experience, yeah, I see really, I have to say, I can't give, there may be a statistic that I can't quote you, but I see both very, very frequently.
My generation talks so openly about depression and mental health issues. And it's interesting because I was realizing as I was preparing for this interview that my mom never really talks about having kids in her class when she was growing up who talked about mental health issues. Was it just as prevalent then, and was neuroinflammation a cause of these disorders at that point? Or is it something that has just come on with more technology and more processed food and all these other things?
Yeah, I don't think it was as prevalent. I really don't. It's interesting. same thing with autism. I'll go back to that just for a second because, you know, when we were younger and your mother probably, you know, you never saw an autistic kid in a class, you know,
right?
And now everybody, you know, it's like the last thing was, I think, 1 in 45. I mean, 2.2%. I mean, it's crazy. Clearly, that's not genetic. So there has been a change. And I think it's the same thing with this. I think this generation, and probably even more than yours, and you're obviously pretty young, but still, you know, there's this generation that's probably even behind you, that I think this generation is definitely more stressed. And you know, it's a lot of factors. I think I started to allude to some of them in terms of the whole, you know, the pressure to perform and this, and the social media, and the cyberbullying and, you know, and all the, and then of course the spending all this time and, you know, the whole thing with video games and what that does. And, you know, I do think there is more. I do. There's that much more anxiety. I mean, one thing I can say is you cannot believe how many teenagers are on SSRIs. You know, SSRIs like mm-hmm. Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro. It is staggering. And why is that? Because I think there's this, you just can't, I think, unfortunately, there's this thing, it even dates back, it's now with childhood. I have a very strong feeling that kids should be kids. When we grew up, and maybe I can speak to your, your mom about this as well. We grew up, kids could be kids.
Right.
You go to school, come back, you do your homework, and then you hung out. We played stickball. I grew up kind of in a, you know, lower middle class. My parents didn't have much money, so we played a sport where it didn't cost anything. I didn't ski or even play tennis. That was, to me, in those days when I was a kid, for rich people.
Sure.
We played with a stickball bat, which was like a broom handle. You wrapped a piece of tape around it, and you played with a pencil pinky or whatever. You played with a basketball or a football. You know, those things are what we did. But we did it all the time, and we just played. And truthfully, we screwed off. We were kids. We had fun. Nowadays, everything is so structured. I mean, in New York City, I see families that are preparing kids for preschool. They're getting tutored because they're getting interviewed for preschool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, I don't know if you guys, are you guys aware of that? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
Stress kids out even younger and younger and younger.
Totally. So you can imagine how that impacts on stress going all the way. I mean, from my medical school training, I would always say it's the same thing in our medical school track. It's almost like you were always making a rationalization that, well, you're in college, you're trying to get into the best medical school, right? You're in medical school, you're trying to get into the best. So you're working really, really hard. I mean, you're giving up, you're sacrificing a lot. Then you're in medical school trying to get in the best residency. So you're sacrificing a lot. Then you're in the residency, you're trying to get in the best fellowship. So you're sacrificing a lot. And then by the time you get to where you are, it's like, who am I? Where am I? And I think in some way, it's very obvious in terms of medicine, that track, but I think our kids are going through some of that as well. And I think it's detrimental. And I think that may be contributing, along with what you said, the toxicants, because toxicants also affect the blood-brain barrier. So all this stress and all the toxicants, and then of course the American diet that unfortunately is really not replete with nutrients, but very nutrient deficient and, you know, high refined carbs, sugar, fats. So that is known also to affect inflammation in the brain. So we have all these things that are promoting brain inflammation nowadays.
You know, doctor, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what parents should not say to their kids if they feel that they're suffering from any kind of a mental health disorder, and yet they'd like to open the lines of communication, and maybe they have a child who's not very communicative. What shouldn't you do in this case?
Well, firstly, and this is probably obvious and hopefully nobody does it, but you should never make them feel badly or ashamed that they have a mental health condition. Okay. You want to create a safe space for them. That's certainly the first place. You want to hopefully create it so that they can come to you and feel safe with you, recognizing that it may be tough for a teenager. So you don't want to pressure them. You want to create situations that maybe they may feel comfortable. So hopefully offer up people they may talk to, you know, other than just their friends, because you can't really talk to friends about this. So, you know, maybe a really good therapist. I know that there are obviously very differences between therapists. If you can find a really compassionate, but very good and gifted therapist, that really helps. Someone that has experience with teens and adolescents. And of course, not easy to get the kid to go, but I think it's trying to keep an openness, and even if they're not responding, just to stay with it, not in a very pressured way, but let them feel your love, and let them feel the safety. And I think that's the, and obviously get help as needed. And, you know, if it's really, if they're cutting themselves or hurting themselves, they need to see a psychiatrist. Because saving them, keeping them safe from themselves. The craziest thing with teens and adolescents is, you know, I know, and my, you know, I listen, I have two kids, they're older now, 26 and 31, but I can remember one of them, they break up with a girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, and, or the person breaks up with them and it's devastating. Right. And for them at that point, it's almost like, I can't go on, you know, I mean, they may not verbalize that, but, you know, I see this in many teens where all of a sudden they can be almost suicidal or self-injurious. And I think one of the keys is to try to help them get perspective and recognize that, you know, I remember a conversation I once had with a teen saying, hey, I know this seems like the end of the world to you, but you have to trust me that in 3 months or 6 months, you're going to look back and this is going to be a tiny blip in your journey of life. And I know how big it is now. And I know it may not be easy to hear this, but and so I think it's to try to impart maybe some wisdom, shared experiences, try to, you know, maybe in some way let them know how you've been there when you were younger as well. You know how much it hurts, but you will come out of it. And because you have to combat the hopelessness and the helplessness, and that those are two very detrimental feelings. But you got to do without pressuring them and without any way. Shame is the worst thing. I mean, so parents have to know that having your kids feel shame, they feel enough shame with a lot of other things, but you certainly don't want to contribute to that.
Dr. Bock, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each show, we ask our guests, what's your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about this connection between neuroinflammation and mental health that you wish they had at the beginning of your career? Because it would have saved you so much research and long hours spent trying to figure it out.
It's a really interesting question. I wonder if you mind if I reframe it a little bit, because what, you know, saying no, what no one told me, I guess nobody told me how influential the first day of my medical school would be, and then the several days after. And what I mean is, in the first day of medical school, you go to a cadaver, and actually you name your cadaver. It's kind of weird, maybe, you know. I remember I was Annie. I mean, it's just kind of what you have to do to get through it. But yet, and you cut into the cadaver the first day, and you were the group of four, right? And so none of my friends in medical school did this. After that first morning, we actually split into small groups and met with professors and second year students to talk about our feelings, about what it was like to cut into a human being, right? And this was all pioneered by, turns out, one of my first mentors and somebody who I do write about in the introduction of my book, because it meant so much, as to the whole thing about being in touch with your feelings, the whole connection. He ran a whole program, was the psychosocial biomedical connection. So that was right then. And then as we went forward in the next few days, we had a class, he talked about, it was about listening to your patients, about the open-ended interview, quite differently from what is done now, where you walk into a doctor's office and you get a few very quick questions, trying to pin the diagnosis so you can get a medication, unfortunately, because of the time constraints. We learned the value of the open-ended interview and how that would shape my career in terms of always asking the questions, looking for underlying answers, not being willing to just treat symptoms. And actually, in some way, was the thing that propelled me into becoming a medical detective. So who would have known that Dr. George Engel, who is really, I look back and had such a profound effect, who would have known that first day could have had such an impact on the direction of my medical career? So hopefully that answers your question in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great answer. And I know that there are so many parents out there who are listening and would love to have more information on your work. So how can they connect with you on social media and the internet?
Well, so the site for the book is called Brain Inflamed, all one word and small letters, braininflamed.com. And they can certainly connect to the website. It's Bock, B-O-C-K, integrative.com. And it's I-N-T-E-G-R-A-T-I-V-E, bockintegrative.com. And that website has a lot of information. And there is a chance to also, plug in and see the kind of approaches that are taken. And there's a lot of helpful information there. And if they, and if anybody ever needs any help in terms of consultations, I have, it's myself, and I have a wonderful nurse practitioner, Jennifer Petkos. And, we are happy to help people. In this day and age, of course, we used to have we see people from around the country and the world. And they used to have to always fly in for the first visit because that's how it was. You always had to see someone, examine them, and then you could take care of them through telemedicine. Nowadays, because of COVID, literally we can do our first visit over telemedicine. And so that has really made it much easier for people from around the country and the world. So we're very happy about that we can actually help people and in this time when they can't obviously fly in to see us.
Well, Doctor, we thank you so much for your time. It's really been very enlightening, and we really are encouraged by the work you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you both.
Again, our thanks to Dr. Kenneth Bock, whose latest book is called Brain Inflamed, Uncovering the Hidden Causes of Anxiety, Depression, and Other Mood Disorders in Adolescents and Teens. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.